Let's open our Bibles back up to Genesis chapter number 22. We're in a very, very important story, and that is the story of Abraham's offering of Yitzhak as a sacrifice at the Lord's command. Now, God was not after human sacrifice. That's very clear in the story. It was a testing of his faith to see whether or not he would trust God to keep his promises. And I've already referenced a couple of times now, the book of Hebrews, chapter number 11, particularly verse 19, where the author of that book says that Abraham considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. So Abraham knew that his son, Yitzhak, was the child of promise, that all of the covenant promises were tied up in him, and yet Yitzhak had no children. He was not yet married. There was no way that God could keep his promises to Abraham if Yitzhak were killed and stayed dead. And so we come to the climax of the sacrifice in Genesis 22, verse 10, and it says this: Then Abraham reached out his hand, he took the knife to slaughter his son. So he is just getting ready to slice his throat, expecting that God would then have to bring him back alive. But instead, something else happens. Verse 11, the angel of He Who Is called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham! And he said, Here am I. And he said, Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing that you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And so now God is able to verbalize something he already knew, but which Abraham needs to know and which we all need to know. And that is, Abraham's faith was so deep and intense that he believed God had to raise Yitzhak from the dead to keep his promises. And so this becomes very much tied in to the sacrifice of Jesus later in history, I think at the exact same site where this is happening. So Abraham lifted up his eyes and he looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So he gives the customary substitutionary atonement, an innocent animal in behalf of a human being. And then he gives a name to this place. Abraham called the name of that place, He Who Is Will Provide. Now remember, He Who is the way that I'm dealing with the divine name. The divine name came into existence many hundreds of years after Abraham. So it is Moses retelling this story after the divine name has been given to him, that he incorporates the divine name into the story. So it is more than likely originally given the name God Will Provide, or El Will Provide. And in Hebrew, that would have been Moreel. So the place where God will see to it. Now, eventually, as Moses is writing the story, he incorporates the name of God into this ancient title, and thus is born Moriah, or the place where Yah will see to it, the place where He Who Is will see to it. And this is where we get the term Moriah, M-O-R-I-A-H, Moriah. And that's the name that of the place that Abraham, in the original part of the story, was told to go and sacrifice his son. Now, I shared with you my personal belief that this is not the Temple Mount proper, but rather a little farther to the north along that same ridgeline. So it's the same hill to where I think the Garden Tomb and Gordon's Calvary is located, the little place of the skull that's at the back of the Garden Tomb area, and also the public bus system parking lot is all located there. And the other potential site would be the traditional site that they take religious tourists to, and that would be the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Although you can't really see much of the original terrain at that particular site. So I think it was at the site where Jesus would see to it by dying at a place where Yitzhak did not, where he voluntarily gave himself as the atoning sacrifice for sin and took care of it. And of course, he is the seed of faith that Abraham was told was coming. The prophecy was, in your seed, meaning Jesus, all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed. So this story should definitely be tied to the story of the gospel. So it is said to this day, on the mount of he who is, it shall be provided. And then the angel of he who is called to Abraham a second time from heaven. And he said, by myself I have sworn, declares he who is, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of the heaven, as the sand that is on the seashore, and your offspring shall possess the gate of his enemies. Now, that phrase there is be in control of the cities that belong to your enemies. And in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed because you have obeyed my voice. Now, that wording right there in verse number 18, that's the one that Paul uses in Galatians chapter 3, when he points out that the word for offspring is a singular word in Hebrew, and that it is in your seed, Abraham, singular seed, all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed. And Paul says that singular seed is Yehoshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah. And so Paul uses the wording from this story in his own teaching that Jesus is the fulfilling of this sacrifice that was set up by God at this particular site. Verse number 19, so Abraham returned to his young men. They arose and they went together to Beersheba, and Abraham lived at Beersheba. So just like he anticipated, because remember, he told these two men, we'll be back, both myself and the young man. They both come back and they turn around and they go right back to where Abraham has been living for quite a few years now, the city of Beersheba. And then he gets word about some family issues up north. When we look at the time here, Abraham has been in the Promised Land for well over 25 years. If the tradition of the Jewish people is correct, that the story we just read of Yitzhak, the sacrifice of Isaac, took place when Isaac was 25, then that means we're 50 years in the Promised Land at this point. 50 years since Abraham left his family members up at Haran in one of the tributary valleys of the river Euphrates. And he gets word about how things have been going with that family line. Verse 20. Now, after these things, it was told to Abraham, behold, Milcah, also has borne children to your brother Nahor. Uz, his firstborn, Buz, his brother, Kemuel, the father of Aram, Hesed, Chazo, Pildash, Jidlaf, and Bethuel. Now, Bethuel fathered Rebekah. Now, that's the whole point of why we needed to see this little genealogical list here, is because there is a story coming up that Bethuel and Rebekah will play a very important role in. And so we need to know that they are on the scene now. These eight, Milcah bore to Nahor, Abraham's brother. And moreover, his concubine, whose name was Rumah, bore Teba, Gaham, Tahash, and Ma'akah. And so in about a 50-year time span, Abraham's brother has his sons and some daughters, and then one of those sons, which we're going to meet, grows up. His name is Bethuel, and he has a daughter named Rebekah. And so Rebekah is probably younger than Isaac by maybe 10 years or so, whenever this next story takes place. And so chapter 23 says that Sarah lived 127 years, and these were the years of the life of Sarah. And since we know when Isaac was born, in what part of her life, we can put some dating to these things here. And so it's in 2039 BC that Sarah dies. And Isaac would have been about 26 years old, I think, something in that neighborhood, about 36 years old when his mother passes away. And Sarah died at Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham went in to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. Now, we have been watching him living in Beersheba for a good long time. But Hebron was his other very significant residence site. And he must have got back into the habit of going back and forth between some of these different encampments as he's running his sheep. And it just so happens that they're back at Hebron whenever Sarah dies, probably of old age. And Abraham grieves over her. They've been married for a good long time. And they were raised together. There's about 9 years difference between them. Sarah is his younger half-sister by about 9 years. So this is a very tough time on Abraham. So verse 3, Abraham rose up from before his dead and said to the Hittites, this would be the sons of Heth, who he has been living around since he came to the land. Mamre would be one of them that had been his friend. He said, I am a sojourner and foreigner among you. Give me property among you for a burying place that I may bury my dead out of my sight. So he reminds them, I've always lived at the permission of all of you in this area. I'm a sojourner. I don't own any property here. I make arrangements for water and grazing rights with people such as yourselves. But now, my wife has died, and I need a permanent place to bury her. And so the Hittites answered Abraham, Hear us, my lord. You are a prince of God among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our tombs. None of us will withhold from you his tomb to hinder you from burying your dead. So they have great respect for him and offer him a choice burial plot. Abraham rose and bowed to the Hittites, the people of the land, and he said, "If you are willing that I should bury my dead out of my sight, hear me and entreat for me Ephron, the son of Zohar, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he owns. It is at the end of his field. For the full price, let him give it to me in your presence as property for a burying place." So Abraham is aware that there is a cave system at the back of Ephron's field. And this is very near Abraham's encampment there at Hebron. And that's what he'd like to use, is a natural cave as the beginning of a family burial plot. It appears to be like a double cave system, one large room and then a smaller room attached to it. And so Ephron, who owns the field that's in front of that cave access, he was sitting among the Hittites, and Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the hearing of the Hittites, of all who went in and out at the gate of his city, "No, my lord, hear me. I give you the field. I give you the cave that's in it. In the sight of the sons of my people, I give it to you. Bury your dead." Now, I have always been troubled by the commentaries at this point that try to make Ephron take advantage of the grief of Abraham here for a few bucks. That he is basically trying to up the price of it, and he's being manipulative. I have never seen that in the story. What I see here, and I share with you my opinion, is that Abraham is very highly respected by these people of the land of Hebron. He has had some of these guys probably grow up around him and see him as a godly man, a kind man, a man who looks out for his family and his friends and tries to do what is right in the sight of his God. And I think that Ephron was quite genuine in offering to just deed the property over to Abraham. And so Abraham's response was this. He bowed down before the people of the land, and he said to Ephron in the hearing of the people of the land, "If you will, hear me. I give the price of the field. Accept it from me that I may bury my dead there." So he says, "No, I want to pay for it. Just take whatever it's valuable, whatever the value is." Ephron answered Abraham, "My lord, listen to me. A piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver, what is that between you and me? Bury your dead." So he actually names what the price of the field and the cave that is part of the field would be. It's 400 shekels. That's 800 days' wages. So we're talking about 2 2/3 years' wages. Maybe $150,000. And if you are fairly well-to-do, which all of these guys are, that's nothing. And so Ephron is quite insistent. He says, "What difference does that piddling amount of money mean to any of us when you are grieving over the loss of your beloved? I want you to just take the field and bury Sarah." And so Abraham listened to Ephron, and Abraham weighed out for Ephron the silver that he'd named in the hearing of the Hittites, 400 shekels of silver, according to the weights current among the merchants. And so Abraham doesn't listen to the offer of just taking the property. He listens to what the fair market value was and says, "Nope, I'm paying that." And he pays it. And so the field of Ephron in Machpelah, which was at the east of Mamre, and so it tells us that the current location of the Cave of the Patriarchs, which you can find on Google Earth. You can go and find it on the websites of different places that talk about the location of the Cave of the Patriarchs. We know that this site is east of the original city of Mamre or Hebron. And so the field with the cave that was in it and all the trees that were in the field throughout its whole area, and it was made over to Abraham as a possession in the presence of the Hittites before all who were at the gate of his city. So effectively, they drafted out the legal description of the property, and it would have described what trees were on the property, what type of trees, where the trees were located in reference to the field. It would have described the size of the field. It would have described the cave itself, where the cave was located in reference to some of the trees and the field, and what it looked like, that it was a double cave. All of that would have been documented out. And then all of the principal parties, Abraham and Ephron Key, and along with the witnesses, would have signed off on this document. And so this becomes the only piece of property that Abraham ever owned in the Promised Land, a burial site. Verse 19, after this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field of Machpelah, east of Mamre, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. The field and the cave that were in it were made over to Abraham as property for a burying place by the Hittites. And so now it belongs to him, and this will be the place where he is buried by his two sons. It will be the place where his son Yitzhak will be buried with his wife, Rebekah. It will be the place where Jacob will eventually be buried along with his wife, Leah. It will be the place that is kept in high esteem by the Israeli people as the burial site of key persons in their family. Now, unfortunately, no one is allowed to go down into the cave at Hebron now. The complex that was built around it by Herod the Great marks it very carefully, exactly where it's at. But it is a site that is in dispute between the Jewish people and the Muslim people, who both lay claim to Abraham as their father. And so there are traditional sites above ground in this area that they will go to and mark as special ceremonies in honor of Abraham and Sarah and all the others that are buried in the cave down below. And there's been some riots, there's been some deaths there, but no one is ever allowed to go down into the actual burying cave itself, which I find to be a great tragedy. Chapter number 24 now. Now Abraham was old, well advanced in years, and he who is had blessed Abraham in all things. So this is very shortly after the death of Sarah. And Abraham is feeling his age. His beloved wife of many decades has passed away. And he can see that his son is still not yet married. And he needs him to be married before he passes from the scene. And so Abraham said to his servant, the oldest of his household, who had charge of all that he had, possibly this is Eliezer, but not necessarily, put your hand under my thigh, that I may make you swear by he who is the God of heaven, the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell, but will go to my country and to my kindred and take a wife for my son Yitzhak, or Isaac. So Abraham takes the head of his household, the most responsible servant, and he puts him under a body oath. Now, the word testimony in our English, which I think comes from the Latin, is built on the word for a testes, or the sexual generation organ. What we see here is a ceremony that is tied into that same sense that you swear by the family jewels, effectively. Now, he doesn't touch Abraham's testes. He simply puts his hand underneath his thigh nearby. And so this is a ceremony that must go way back in history. And he is put under this binding oath that he must not allow Isaac to marry a Canaanite girl. He has to marry someone from the family. Now, incest was not yet an issue because the gene pools were still very deep, and so we should not ever worry about that part of it. Effectively, he is sending him off to Mesopotamia to find somebody from the parallel family line that we just read about a little while ago. A girl that presumably has been raised to worship the true and living God, because the last thing that Abraham knew when he left his brother was worshiping the same God that had called Abraham. And so this is trying to keep it all in the family, keep it all in the faith. And we're pretty much out of time for today. So what we'll do is we'll mark our place here. You can read a little head on your own. But when we get back tomorrow, we're going to follow this servant off to Mesopotamia and get a wife for the son of the promise so that the family tree can keep growing as God intended.